This is a production of Cornell University.
It is March 11th, 2014 at 4:30 in 401 Physical Sciences Building. A quorum is present. I call this meeting of the University Assembly to order. Welcome all our visitors and guests. Thank you for coming and participating in shared governance. We do have a full agenda, so without further ado, let me turn to the first order of business, which is an annual report by the University Ombudsman. We're honored to have all three ombudsmen here with us today, Charlie Walcott, Linda Folkson, and Adam Kleinberger. Welcome, and thank you for coming. Without further ado, I turn the floor over to Professor Walcott for 20 minutes.
Thank you so much, Jim. We come every year because you are the responsible organization who hires and fires us and to whom we report our evil or not evil deeds. And so it's a great pleasure to be here. For those of you who do not know what the Ombudsman is all about, let me just give a very brief summary of the situation. We are basically a place where members of the Cornell community can come and talk about problems and issues and obtain a certain amount of guidance and wisdom from my colleagues, none from me, of course, but we do our best. We operate in Simpson Hall, where we hold court. We're open essentially all the time. And we adhere to basically four major tenets. The first of them is independence. We are an independent department of the university, as I said, reporting to the university assembly, though I must confess we are paid by the president of the university, so when David calls, we answer the telephone. We are informal. That is, we do not participate in formal processes. We're neutral. We don't take sides in various discussions. And finally, and most importantly, we're confidential. And confidential has, in the grand Cornell tradition, two asterisks after it. One is that should you cause harm to yourself or others, we would feel obliged to do something about it. And the second is that we do not have standing in a court of law. We do not have so that if we are subpoenaed, we do have to provide information, though we are very careful about not keeping written records and destroying them when we do. Basically, the message I would bring to you is that when a couple of years ago I started the Ombudsman's office, I felt that there was general ignorance in the community
outside the room.
Done and done. So we took a great deal of effort to inform the community of what the Ombudsman is all about, and you'll see on our summary a list of the things that we have done. This resulted in a substantial increase.
Sir, may I interrupt your speech just for a second? I believe this banner is obstructing the view of other members of the assembly. I would ask the banner be put outside.
Can I ask? No.
No, I'm asking the banner to please be put outside. Please forgive the interruption. Free speech is certainly on the agenda tonight, and we look forward to a firm debate. It will upset the members looking this way. I am asking the banner to be removed from the room. Will you please remove the banner from the room? And the answer is no. I am asking you to please remove the banner from the room. It is disturbing the meeting. It is disturbing the members' ability to hear the speaker. Ma'am, may I please ask you?
So I'm here. My name is Kay Luce. I'm a director of Campus Information and Digital Relations, and I'm here to ask on behalf of the SAS office as event manager. I'm going to read the responsible speech You've heard this, most of you, I believe, so please bear with me so that we're all in accordance and acting together. I'm here this afternoon representing the University Administration. I welcome you to this event sponsored by the University Assembly, a duly registered organization of the university. This event is recognized as a university event. On behalf of the university, I wish to remind all participants that the university campus code of conduct includes provision for responsible speech and expression and for the maintenance of public order. The code states freedom to express oneself and to be heard, and freedom to assemble and lawfully protest peacefully are essential to academic freedom. You can speak in a moment. Thank you very much. These campus code rules apply to all persons on the campus or using its buildings. And it is a violation of these rules to prevent an invited speaker, Charlie Walcott, from presenting his or her ideas, beliefs, and information to obstruct others from hearing them. Quite simply, the speaker has a right to speak without intimidation, and the audience has a right to hear what the speaker has to say. This right pertains without regard to any individual's or group's assessment of the legitimacy, intelligence, morality, or offensiveness of the speaker's position. The code further states, those who dislike what an invited speaker is saying also have rights. They include distributing leaflets outside the meeting room, picketing peacefully, boycotting the speech, walking out, asking pointed questions, and within the limits set by the moderator, expressing displeasure with evasive answers. Those who oppose the speaker may thus make their views known, so long as they do not thereby interfere with the speaker's ability to be heard or the right of others to listen. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to review this important information. Undoubtedly, you are already familiar with them and its basic tenets. There will be no calls for further reference to them. However, it is useful to have everyone equally acquainted with these regulations. Again, I welcome you in the spirit of open inquiry and learning, and invite you to be stimulated by the presentation and pursue your concerns in the question and answer period that will follow.
We do have free speech amendment resolution on the docket. We would love to engage with all present in a two-sided debate. If you are willing to remove your matter, you are welcome to come back in and join that debate. If not, I would ask you to please remove. It is interrupting, and leaflets and pamphlets and those kinds of things are allowed outside the venue. As the organizer of the meeting, I am asking the banner to be removed.
She didn't mention anything about
that. That's very important, especially for the people that are discussing that, and how the campus code, the ambiguities of the campus code can be used to actually oppress students. We are not opposing anyone's expression. Very, you have started the competition. I really have always liked fully opening the banner. There's no reference whatsoever in not having the banner. If you force us to be...
I recognize Mr. Smith.
As head of the SA, I think we've seen, even this year alone, a number of things that would actually be classified as disruptive. We have people jeering, yelling, calling us all types of names in the name of funding. I think this is hardly disruptive. I'd like to ask the ombudsman, if at all, you, and I'm sure in your years on this...
Please address the chair, Mr. Smith.
I'm sure you could ask the ombudsman and our guests, if on their years on the campus, they've actually seen a number of protests and things like that actually would be classified as disruptive. I think this is peaceful. Can we just let them stand here, show the banner, and get on with the presentation?
It is up to the members whether they, because there has been a member who believes that this is not disruptive, we can address it by the members. I will not put the question down, but I'm sure they've seen many things of many types. But I ask the members if they would be willing to have the banner in here. There will be presentations on that screen later, of which that banner would be obstructionary. And it is potentially a case of feeling intimidated and also being in pictures with things that are not explained. So I would ask members, do they wish to have the banner removed, or are they willing to allow the banner to be put up in the front? Mr. Wayne.
Is there a motion?
The banner should be removed when the PowerPoint presentation is in.
Yeah, we can move it.
So you're willing to put the banner over to the side on the curtain during the presentation?
Removed.
Is that acceptable to members? Do I hear any objections from the members?
Can we just line them up here, because this way they're not obstructing any view, or while we're focused on the ombudsman and having a way.
You want to stand back here? When the presentation comes.
Very well. I'm not hearing objection from members. You may have your banner over to the this side. So, would you be willing to move your banner now, please, so that you do not disrupt the meeting?
When the presentation starts, absolutely.
I thought the podium just agreed.
Okay.
When the PowerPoint begins, you'll move the banner. That was my understanding, but I didn't understand.
Very well. I'm not hearing objections from members. We'll permit it at this point. Are you comfortable, Mr. Ombudsman? Then I apologize for the interruption. Please continue, sir.
As I said, the most important thing is that the number of visitors has greatly increased, and this year, though we're only partway through the year, it seems to be holding up. And so I think, by and large, the message has gotten out. And I would like to ask Linda Forkson to talk further about what it is that we've been doing and the kinds of issues that we've been seeing.
Thank you. So of course, we're here to mainly address the 2012-2013 annual report. We're also quite a ways into our next year, and so we'll also comment on that. So I know you have been sent our annual report, and also you have a sheet that just kind of summarizes the information. So there's no, I know you've read everything, so we don't want to just go through the data, but what we did really want to make the point to you is the visitors this year has gone up precipitously. We had 380 this year, that's compared to 250 the prior year, so 52% increase. Historically, the largest number of visitors has been in the non-academic area, and that's the same for this past year. And historically, the greatest number of the greatest area of the complex is in the employment area. So we have seven areas of complex areas where visitors need help, and those are academic, administrative, business and service, employment, human rights, interpersonal disputes, and values, ethics, and standards. And we certainly see a large array of situations in all of those areas. But basically, our function is, as Charlie said, following our tenets: confidentiality, informality, neutrality, and independence, meeting with visitors, and trying to be helpful and guide them in whatever situation is interfering with their point of view. So kind of hard to get a sense of what the issues are and sort of the breadth of the issues without hearing some cases. So everything is confidential, but we have just a few narratives to share with you to just give you some insight into the kind of complicated situations that we see day in and day out. And so we picked one that relates to a non-academic employee. We picked one that relates to an undergraduate student, so students in situate, and one that relates to faculty. And as you know, we serve and try to be helpful to all constituents.
And of course, these are not actual details from cases. As Linda said, they're either composites or details that are like what could happen. But this should give you a flavor of the types of issues you have to deal with. Just want to make sure you realize
right.
They're not.
So, like a situation merged, that kind of thing. In other words, not a particular situation. So, in terms of a non-academic employee, an employee, I'll give you a sort of kind of flavor of what we might see, meeting with a visitor on any day. An employee is experiencing a medical issue and reports people to meeting with a medical leave officer. Meanwhile, the employee receives his first negative performance evaluation. The employee feels he is going to be terminated or, at the very least, disciplined by his supervisor because of his performance. He believes his performance is related to his medical issue. He is confused about his options. So that's an example of a case, non-academic employee. The next is a student case. A student reports being placed on academic probation because of her low GPA. She believes the contributing factor is related to missing a project deadline during a religious holiday she observed. At the time, she didn't bring it to anyone's attention, which she now regrets. She wants to be removed from probationary status and wonders if there is anything she can do about the situation there. The student case, and then finally a case that involves the faculty situation. A faculty member is very concerned about a graduate student who is about to be withdrawn from his department. The student has not performed academically. The faculty member is concerned about the mental health of the student as he has lost a considerable amount of weight and appears to be manic, among other concerns. The faculty member would like to involve the input of a counselor and he'd like to contact the student's parents, but he doesn't want to do anything that violates privacy provisions or policy. So this is the first year that we've ever done that. We've tried to, you know, give you sort of a sense of the, just the kind of the pulpy nature of the matters that we see, and so we hope this helps us to kind of demonstrate what it is that we do kind of day in and day out. Just a couple other quick things, and we want to actually, you know, make sure that we have plenty of time for any questions that we have either about the report or anything that we've done. So we've done, you know, a fair amount of outreach. We continue, we've been doing that the last 2 years under Charlie's leadership. We continue to do that. And in terms of the number of visitors for the coming year, which, you know, we'll be reporting on you know, coming this time next year, we anticipate that our numbers are going to continue to be high because already during the half year mark we were at 170, so that projects to the same sort of number as this past year, a higher number that we've seen in the past. The outreach, I think probably many of you have noticed, various emails that you've got posted around campus presentations, that kind of thing. So it's all laid out in the materials that you have. We did just want to mention, thanks to you, our new guidelines are in place and posted around the web. And since those guidelines have been in place since 1969, we certainly appreciate your help in moving that forward. And just really quickly, one of the other projects that we're involved in is the non-academic grievance procedure provides that a person going through that process can have an employee representative. And we work with the employee assembly to have identified people who want to volunteer in this capacity, and then we help them provide training. And then when we meet with visitors who are proceeding with this process, we connect them to the representative. So I just mentioned that because we're always interested, and I know everyone has a lot on their site, but if anyone is interested in availing themselves of that volunteer opportunity, we would be happy to hear from you. And if anyone can do it, any staff person that can know whether you're an academic or non-academic staff. So that's pretty much what we're here to tell you, and we're very glad to be
thank you. Members, do you have questions? Mr. Smith.
I guess this just might be because of the way I'm processing the visitors in my mind and reading it on the paper, but given the example you kind of gave, does this mean that you're also dealing with cases involving individuals who are not necessarily affiliated with Cornell, but who take some sort of issue with somebody or have had an issue, I guess, like on campus, with somebody on campus?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, our office exists to serve community members, students, faculty, and staff, and I. But certainly, in fact, lately we've had more of this. Parents sometimes call other community members, and we certainly, you know, will field their inquiries. It's generally you know, kind of easier to do what we were established for, which is to help community members, because we just get face to face and for
policy is a
question, talk them through options, but we will try to be helpful to others as well.
We should. As far as the term visitor, it could be clients, you know, people coming to see us, cases, although cases could imply something else. So the word is somewhat insignificant, but that's the word our office uses. We get many offices of our kind of traditional office and offices use that word.
In other words, you don't want to
say
we're neutral.
Other questions from members? Seeing none, thank you very, very much for coming. We appreciate your time. Next order of business is to discuss Resolution 9, Resolution to Clarify Responsible Free Expression in the Campus Code of Conduct. Before we begin, prior agreement, there is a special rule on debate currently in place. After the sponsors, who are Mr. Meese and Professor Wayne, have introduced the resolution, we will open the speakers list from University Assembly members. UA members will be allowed 2 minutes to present a statement or ask questions to the sponsors, who will have 1 minute to reply. After all members have had an opportunity to speak once, we will open the floor to a speakers list for non-members who are in attendance. They will have 2 minutes for a statement or comment, followed by 1 minute of response by the sponsors. And then if needed, we'll go through the members again, and then we'll close debate and come to a vote. If there are no questions on the special rule, Mr. Meese, are you you're bringing up the presentation, right?
So good afternoon. Really appreciate everybody's interest in this and coming out. I think that this is a great display to show how committed and passionate Cornell students, employees, and faculty are about various topics. So I appreciate that. I wanted to start by reading an excerpt of the code because I think freedom of speech has been paramount in all of the CJC's discussion and all of the UA's discussion, and I know among a lot of the community discussion has been paramount. So I read this from page 5 of the campus code. All the members have a copy in their folder at the last page. Freedom of speech within commonly accepted limits of safety and civility is a paramount value in a university community. In a university community, as in society as a whole, freedom of speech cannot be absolute. Speech that is libelous or that sets a crowd of riot deserves no protection. Perhaps no one in real life has ever falsely shouted fire in a crowded theater, but sure no one has the right to do so. Within such commonly accepted limits, however, freedom of speech should be the paramount value in a university community, because it is a special kind of community whose purpose is the discovery of truth through the practices of free inquiry. A university has an essential dependence on a commitment to the values of unintimidated speech. I thought that's really interesting because that's already in the code. We've set the stage in the code at the beginning of this session that freedom of speech is absolutely the number one thing of importance. I think the top part of this sign absolutely sums it up right. Free speech is without permit, and that's what we'd like to demonstrate through walking you through the changes of the code that we have. Randy's up here with me. I had to step away for a family matter, and Randy stepped in his chair. A little bit about the history. The Code and Judicial Committee over the past year in meetings that have been open to the public and which opposing views were both welcomed and invited met in an effort to strengthen free speech at Cornell. That was our primary goal, was to go through and strengthen free speech and consider all different viewpoints. You can see the history here. I don't want to go through and read slide by slide, but it is a snapshot of what has went into Resolution 9. So the resolution, which all members have a copy of, I would ask for unanimous consent in waiving the reading of the resolution, as I will highlight the be it therefore resolved clause.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Great. So the be it therefore resolved, what we're proposing is that this would be the, if passed, this would be the language of the code. Outdoor picketing, marches, rallies, and other demonstrations are traditional and legitimate forms of self-expression and dissent on campus. Such activities are allowed so as long as they respect the policies for the space in question and do not disrupt other functions, including without limitation, regular and special curricular activities, extracurricular activities, academic processions and events, conduct of university business, and employment interviews. The right of free expression here, as in other contexts, requires respect for the rights of others. Outdoor picketing, marches, rallies, and other demonstrations generally pose no threat or long-lasting exclusive use of university grounds property. While it's generally desirable to have advance notice of meetings so that, for example, university staff can help safeguard participants, no university permit is required for such outdoor activities, so long as the activity does not infringe upon the primary education mission of the university and does not disrupt other university functions. The the presence of a counter-protest does not in itself constitute a disruption to university function or authorized events. Moreover, those who oppose a speaker may thus make their views known so long as they do not thereby interfere with the speaker's ability to be heard or the right of others to listen. So I think the biggest takeaway there is you'll see in I'm going to actually skip ahead of slide. What's changed? The strikeout is what's being removed. The blue is what's being added. The old language of the code said there appears to be no need for a mandatory permit procedure for such outdoor activities. That's a lot of what people say ambiguity. That's where that ambiguity was coming from. There appears to be no need. Maybe there is, maybe there's not. But what the CJC has done is put in language that says there is no post, or there is no permit required. So we're absolutely right. Free speech is without permit. Absolutely true. There's supposed to be a public comment period. We received 31 comments. Every one of the members has a copy of all the 31 comprehensive comments in their packet, which you were sent in advance. Feel free to go through that. I also believe that there's probably some members of the community today that will speak on such issues, and we're happy to clarify some of those questions. So I think some of our rationale regarding the policies of the space in question, the rough solution refers to written policies of the space, such as the Arts Quad, Daily Plaza, the Plantation, and Hope Plaza, among others. There is certain requirements for the right to use space. We felt that it was absolutely paramount that the right for you to speak freely in an outdoor space is absolutely essential, and we're not asking for that to be limited in no way. We're encouraging you to speak freely. But what this draws attention to is that there are specific spaces on campus, be it surrounded by academic buildings or other university functions, that do have policies and procedures for the use of amplified sound, for the ability to drive a car onto a quad or a plaza, or the ability to build a structure or things like that. And that's what it's doing, is it's referring the code back to the policies of the specific spaces, but in no way is it requiring a university's property form or any other permit whatsoever. In the case of a plaza, one of the instances on November 19th, some of the confusion came from the fact that they agreed with no permit was necessary, but a lot of it came when the SJP group to not use a megaphone, which is consistent with Hope Plaza. SJP had every right to be on Hope Plaza, every right to be there. And the CJC, the sentiment of the CJC, was that's true, and that's paramount to the discussion. The key is that there's some policies, freedom of speech is necessarily not, it's absolutely your right, but it's with some policies of certain spaces that happens. The other thing is, the committee believes the proposed resolution would clarify the campus code as it's currently outlined. We feel that that ambiguity is there. So our hope is to have this resolution passed today so that we can clarify the code and we can make sure that free speech is without purpose. Absolutely, absolutely our number one priority in this process. Here's a few policies for outdoor space. These are all available online. They're set by the policy, they're set by the space owner or whoever the person, the employee, the administrator in charge of that space, and often come around various aspects of use. But outdoor space is absolutely within your right to freely express yourself, but doesn't always mean that amplified sound or several of those other aspects which are governed by some of the policies for that use of space. I'm going to turn it over to Randy. Yes.
The proposed resolution strengthens free speech at Cornell by changing the word in the campus code of conduct concerning permits from "there appears to be no need for a mandatory permit procedure" to "no university permit is required." Opponents of the current resolution object to the phrase, "such activities are allowed so long as they respect the policies of the space in question." As a limitation to free speech, making the proposed resolution ambiguous. however, with freedom comes responsibility. The proposed change from there appears to be no need for a mandatory permit procedure to no university permit is required means that anyone may exercise his or her or their freedom to speak to any number of people in a spontaneous or planned manner at any place, at any time, on campus as a protest or counter demonstration without the need for a permit. This is freedom of speech. However, it is not an unconstrained freedom. The freedom of speech at Cornell University is limited to those activities that do not disrupt other university functions. The word ambiguous is derived from the Latin ambi, meaning both ways, and agere, to drive. Free speech, although a fundamental one, is not the only driver in determining actions and rules that govern actions. Being human and writing a code of conduct for human behavior cannot be reduced to an equation with one variable. The proposed change to the campus code was intended to strengthen the fundamental right to free speech while clearly stating the conditions where someone can use amplified sound that supports free speech but may also disrupt other university functions. I want to be clear that this equation supports but is not required for free speech. I'll specifically state the policy for Hope Plaza regarding amplified sound and the policies that regulate the relevant portion of the code. Amplified sound is permitted between 12 noon and 1 p.m. only, and this must be recorded on the reservation request and on the use of university property form. This policy can be seen as a way to balance the various rights and drivers of various groups wanting to use Hope Plaza without limiting any rights to assemble and speak freely. Amplified sound is something that supports free speech, but is not required. These policies of Hope Plaza and other outdoor spaces are clear and unambiguous. Moreover, the policies are not ambiguous to the university employees who make the university run every day and would have to observe reasonable amounts of order. In order to support my position that amplified sound is not necessary for free speech and is thus not an entitlement, I will mention two speeches made before the development of amplified sound. Benjamin Franklin estimated in 1739 that George Whitefield preached to about 30,000 people in Philadelphia. And he's heard by 30,000. Elizabeth Cady Stanton talks about 300 women up at the Seneca Falls Convention up the road. And Abraham Lincoln gave the Gettysburg Address without amplified sounds to 15,000. It is the message and not the technology that we must depend on to get our message across.
So I think, information, we absolutely agree. The free speech is without permit. And that now, to us, and many members of the community, very clear in the proposed changes to the code. So now I would turn the time back to the chair for discussion.
Thank you, sponsors. University Assembly members, are there those that wish to make a statement or have questions for the sponsors? Mr. Moore, for 2 minutes.
Yes, I have a question for Greg and Randy. So, specifically on what are the policies of the space in question? In particular, if you look on the student activities office website right now, it says that any outdoor event or any event that may be deemed controversial must file a university's property form at least 3 weeks before the event. In addition, it says that groups can be fined if they do not do so. That's clearly a policy that seems to be in contradiction with the code, but is that considered a policy of the case in question?
I'm not with the Dean of Students Office, so I wouldn't have the specifics on that. It's not a specific policy governing Hope Plaza, for example, one of those spaces, or the slope, the specific policy for the use of that space. So the code is going to be the document that reigns. I mean, it's what everyone refers back to. If there's clarity that's needed in a department policy, I mean, that's definitely a question that you would be able to raise with them specifically. But the code does not require a permit, and the
the reference to the space in question comes with the specific space.
Mr. Booker, Professor Booker.
Yeah, I think that's one of the issues that's not clear to a lot of people. The difference between the rules and regulations that apply to the state space versus what the code of conduct that adopts the community and community activity. And I think it won't be resolved until someone sits down and actually thinks about how we use the rules and regulations for the community and space, and then make an effort to ensure that the code of conduct reflects
I have a question. With the code as it is right now, if a student or a group were to violate a policy that's written out elsewhere in regards to the space that they're using, they were to violate that policy, would they face the same consequences as if that policy was actually in the code of conduct? I don't know who's best to answer that question, but I think I'm just not understanding that.
Yes, sir. I don't think the answer is in the room. Mr. Schmidt?
Oh, would a vet manager know the answer to that question?
We can ask. Do you know the answer to the question?
Member
may repeat the question.
A student or a group of students were to use some Cornell property for a protest or for whatever activity that they're planning, and they were to violate a policy that's of that space that's written out elsewhere and not in the code of conduct, would they face the same consequences of violating that policy as if it were in the code? Like, if that policy was written out in the code instead of elsewhere, would they face the same consequences, or what's the difference between the two?
You know, because I'm not the person that makes those decisions that goes beyond me, I don't want to even remotely answer that question.
Okay.
Please.
All right, well, thank you.
Please do, Mr. Wynn, or Professor Wynn.
I showed the whole plaza. vehicles are not permitted on whole plaza. So if somebody wanted to drive down with a microphone and stuff like that, my guess that the CUP would do something about it. The policies are specific and clear.
If I may also, basically, if they violate the policy of the space, the event managers or other people there would attempt to enforce the policies to use the space, and if the people involved continue to not comply, they could be referred to the code if they are students under the code. The discipline under the code would not change.
And the discipline under the policy would not?
There's no discipline under the policy. The discipline for students is under the code, so it would all reside essentially there. Additional members? Mr. Smith.
I have a few questions. You
I guess it seems to me that the nature of a protest or a demonstration around whatever the party name is supposed to be disruption, I think that's kind of the whole point. And I'm just not clear, just based on the language here, what actually constitutes a disruption? What is a university function? And maybe there's a community coming in the code that I'm not quite doing. And then I'm not sure if a list that was presented about state-specific policies, if that's exhaustive. Is that exhaustive? And then based on even in the aftermath of this, if this even passes, would it be possible for different entities of this university, given the decentralized nature of this campus, and clearly that you can't even answer a question already, is it possible for different entities to create state-specific policies that then you can still contradict or conflict the COVID network? And who would be the entity to approve those state-specific policies? Because it seems to me that there's still some gap. There's some lack of communication here. And if we want to continue to state specific policies, then why not enumerate these state specific policies, particularly for whole plaza or daily plaza or whatever, in the code, just to make it easier. I'm just not sure why that's not quite happening. And I'm not sure if this is current. Because to my understanding, we've moved away from UDP form, we now have an event registration form. We've changed a lot of things on that event registration form, and also a few things about accessibility and such, and I'm not totally sure if this is up to date yet. But yeah, so those are no questions. Last part is an observation, not a
Mr. Wayne, Professor Wayne.
I can't answer certain questions like the primary mission of the university. I think it's not productive to take the question. So our policies in question, for example, Bailey Hall, Bailey Plaza is required. And so during the academic year, if you want to have some private thing, people might choose to go. Whole Plaza, you could see what the rules were. They're not somebody saying, you like you because your color or that because your sex or just anything. I mean, it's just we want cars not to be there at a certain time. We want tables not to both extend too far into the space so enough people can walk by and see all the things. They're just
I think you bring up an interesting point, right? I think that there's no perfect answer to any of these questions, right? Regardless of how you look at it or where your viewpoint comes from. One of the suggestions that we've been throwing around and toying our minds is it would be great to have a centralized website where, protests or outdoor tickets or marches or rallies.cornell.edu where these things were made clear and put it on the those are great things for us as UA members if these are real paramount issues to pick up and tackle. Those are not necessarily code-related issues. That's more how the university conducts its business and the functions of the university. So I would encourage you all as members of the university
10 seconds.
To take up those issues and bring things to the table, bring the solutions you're asking for to the table and help us in this. But what this does is it clarifies the code that
said
there's no permit that's required for any
outdoor. Generally, that's time. I would add one clarification. There's a question about putting it in the code. The code applies to students, but policies of space apply to faculty, staff, etc. So there is an issue that goes beyond students if there were protests beyond students. Mr. Ruiz Calderon, for 2 minutes.
I actually think this is quite specific. I would agree with this. You actually mentioned outdoor picketing, marches, rallies, demonstrations, all allowed. And then you go further into saying that the disruption would be that you can't, like, disrupt the space when you, like, job interviews and other rights. I think it's quite specific. Personally, I kind of agree with it. So I'm really more curious to hear what other people find it to be ambiguous. I think you specifically mentioned what was ambiguous. I think you specifically said this is what you can do, and it pretty much covers all bases, and this is what is considered a disruption, and you covered all bases. I'm actually very curious to see what other people find to be this ambiguity because I think you mentioned it. So that's just my comment on it.
Sponsors have any?
No comment.
Professor Rowe, 2 minutes?
I mean, to me, the issue is not the code. The issue is interpretation of the rules
that specific locations have and whether those rules, in fact, can be used to limit free speech. See, this is an issue with the code. The code, I think, is fine. It says you can't do it without permit. However, if any entity, whether it be a dean or the president or whoever, were to take some rule for a specific location and use it in a way that could be shown to limit free speech, that's what I'm against. Okay, I'm not against the code because the code doesn't deal with those kinds of issues. You almost have to be reactive. You can't be proactive because you can take any rule and use it to limit free speech if you want to. So I'd be the first one out there, you know, if they said, right, you can't do such and such because I don't like it, you know, and that was to limit free speech. It was shown that was the case. That's something you're really against. The code shouldn't deal with that. And I'm not sure I made that clear. My mind is, I've been traveling a lot. But basically the idea is that it isn't a question of permit. It's a question of whether those permits and rules and regulations are being used or could be used to limit free speech. I mean, that's the issue. Okay. So I think you go down that list of whole class of things, you say, well, why 12 to 1? Is that capricious and arbitrary? Why not 12 to 15? Maybe why not 1:15? So you don't want to interfere with the bell. You know, I don't know where people would be. You know, but I would look at that and say, well, that seems sort of capricious and arbitrary. Why are you limiting it that to those hours? That to me is the kind of issue that you discuss. Not whether
10 seconds.
That's in the code or not. I don't think the code should deal with those kinds of specifics unless it can be shown that those, you know, are there specifically to limit free speech.
That's time, sir.
If I may, to our knowledge, there's no state policy that limits the rights to free speech or free expression. It limits amplified sound outside of a set period of time, but you can stand at Whole Plaza 24 hours a day and shout at the top of your lungs whatever you want, and that's totally fine within the code. There's no question on that.
But it may not be okay within the rules and regulations of Whole Plaza. That's the code doesn't deal with that. Whole Plaza could suddenly say, well, we changed our mind. We don't want any amplified sound. That has nothing to do with the code. The code doesn't cover that. Who's responsible for those kinds of decisions? Are those the kinds of things you really want to protest?
And to our knowledge, those don't exist currently outside of the amplified sound between 12 and 1. And if this is an issue that we want to take up as an assembly, I think we should go after space policy next, if you want.
Thank you. Ms. Bailey, 2 minutes.
Great. So I'm going to kind of piggyback off of what Dr. Lowe was talking about. What I really want to know here is why are we dealing with this in the code? And why are we not focusing on the faculty senate recommendations that were made and were presented to us not very long ago? You know, I think that, you know, adding more language can make the policy seem more arbitrary, whereas if you were focusing on removing that ambiguous line from student IDs or, changing the faculty policy so that there don't have to be agents of the university before, you know, they're allowed to speak their mind. That there's more training for event managers, that they're, you know, that we could clarify to students that they do have the right to assemble without a UDC. I think my question for you is why are we not addressing these issues and why are we addressing this?
Those items that you mentioned, not all of them live in the code. Not all of them live in the code. Some of those are policies of the university. Right, the back of the Cornell ID card, that's not in the code to my knowledge. That's a policy of the university. So I see here a lot of questions being raised about university policy. The Codes and Judicials Committee is responsible for the campus code and the campus code alone. We don't address policy issues at the broad level of the university. So many of those recommendations are very policy-centered. Training for events managers, faculty not being agents of the university, that's a great topic for the Faculty Senate to bring up and put forward to the president. You know, if there's more training needed for events managers, that's something that any assembly can tackle through a resolution. But what the Codes and Judicial Committee did was focus on the code, and those are the issues at hand that we're proposing here in the resolution, not the other policies that we're trying to pull into this.
Thank you.
the way I see it is meiosis is called meiosis instead of meiosis because somebody didn't read the original paper, which is meiosis. The report recommendations for November 19th incident Oak Plaza isn't a single set of recommendations. So I'm just going to read a few lines from that report. The committee could not reach unanimity on the question of whether a permit or notification should be necessary for use of advertised signs. Where two groups wish to use the same outdoor space at the same time for competing purposes, little is gained by drowning out each other with amplified sound. And then that was balanced with an alternative opinion. Any prohibition on use of amplified sound at a reasonable decibel level in connection with rallies, protests, and demonstrations, and persons on the right to free expression, even if the sole purpose of a counter-protest is to drown out and prevent the original protest from being heard, that is to allow somebody else's speech not to get through.
That
so
takes time. I would clarify, the University Assembly was asked to clarify the use of permits and amplified sound. The short answer would be no permits required is in the code. Policies of the space deals with amplified sound. That may be an imperfect solution, but that is the permits and ID card and all those things were referred to other offices that are in charge of those pieces. Other member questions? Not a second question at this time. We will come back to members before we're done. For those who have not had a question yet, then we will be opening the floor to a speakers list. We already have four members who have requested to speak. There may be others, and we will get to you. But first, I would recognize Mr. Max Ozzo. Is that the correct pronunciation?
Isle.
Mr. Isle, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
So in my understanding, last year, when this issue was discussed at the University Assembly, the overall recommendation of the room was to wait until you had the Faculty Senate report to move forward with that information in order to get the campus code modified in a way appropriate to the situation. But the Faculty Senate report is crystal clear. It says, make sure that no permits are required and make sure that that ambiguity is eliminated. Here's the issue at hand. There's actually a concrete situation which precipitated this incident. The concrete situation was one in which we set up a demonstration. In response, an opposing group set up a demonstration and secured a permit. Using that permit, and now I'm quoting from Kathy's owner, CPAC had rights to the space. They asked SJP to move out. There was an official complaint filed that CPAC had booked the space and SJP didn't rent the space. So it's just a matter of who files for the space. Also very clear, to my knowledge, that quotation has not been disputed, so I understand it as a valid quotation. So what I understand is going on is that the policies of the space in question can easily be written in such a way as to demand permits or allow permitted groups to trump the free speech rights of unpermitted groups. And that's exactly what happened, which is why we've gone through a year and a half process of looking into this situation and amending the campus code in a reasonable manner. Unfortunately, that is not what has happened. In fact, the opposite has happened. The ambiguity is now written in to the very language of the campus code itself. This doesn't reduce or eliminate the problem. It, in fact, magnifies the problem and builds it into the campus code. The question before people is, what kind of campus code do they want? A clear one that protects free speech, or a muddled one that will be used to prevent free speech? Thank you.
Thank you.
I mean, I definitely want one that clarifies free speech, and I think we've done that before. The language was, there appears to be no need. One of the issues with SJP on November 19th was the use of their megaphone, which is amplified sound. If they would put their amplified sound away, would they have been able to continue to occupy that space? These are all great what-if questions that, unfortunately, the events didn't play out that way. They didn't cooperate with the policies of the space, and they had to deal with the consequence of not...
Yeah, the other group didn't have amplified sound either.
Order, please. Order, please.
I'm all about giving the facts.
Sure.
My opinion in that. Can I resume that?
Yes, please.
So I think we did do that, and we did clarify, because we directed folks to reference the state's question. There's a lot of what ifs, and the policies could be written. The policies aren't written that way right now. They're not limiting a free speech. The code in the way it's proposed is very clear that no permit is required for free speech.
Thank you. The next speaker on the list is Professor Leibowitz. Professor Leibowitz, I believe you're present. We recognize you, ma'am, for 2 minutes.
Thanks very much. I want to just use my time to emphasize some things that have already been said. Number one, I think that the CJC is clearly trying to make the code better. Unfortunately, I think they made it worse for various reasons that we just heard about. I think there's a combination of ambiguity that people have discussed, as well as language that places overly broad discretion in the hands of administrators that can lead to restrictions on speech. I think the code should be left alone, and it sounds to me like there's a sense coming out of a number of UA members about that the code, if it's left alone, would be fine. And then the attention could be shifted to whether the policies as they're written by who, hopefully we would get policies written in a democratic way rather than handed down by administrators who are not elected by anybody, that it seems to me that if we can focus on a participatory process of writing policies that are consistent with the campus code statement of ensuring free speech without a permit process, that should be the focus of our attention. So I would suggest voting this resolution down, keeping the campus code as it is, and having a democratic participatory process for creating policies consistent with the code. I just point out that the language about so long as they respect the policies of the space in question, as other people have said, simply opens the door for others to write policies. As you pointed out, things like if you have controversial speech that you anticipate, you have to get a permit. Clearly, that's the kind of policy that limits free speech. I don't think we want to open the door to that. And then also language about it's generally desirable to have advance notice, meaning simply
that is the member's time.
Reinsert the ambiguities that led to the problems originally. So I urge you to vote this down.
Professor Wayne, for a minute.
I want to say the CJC was a democratic, open, participatory process. Unfortunately, the two faculty seats were never filled.
Others? Next on the speaker's list is Mr. Daniel Sinton. Sinikin, thank you. Sir, you are recognized for 2 minutes.
All right, I'm on the CJC. I'm opposed to the resolution. Respectfully, I disagree with much of what Randy and Greg have said in defending it. I think it's very clear that it is an unclear resolution. The language of deferring to the policies of the space in question immediately opens up the possibility of, for instance, accessing the first point on the Hope Plaza policies of the space, which requires reservations if you want to use that space, which were exactly what precipitated why we're here today. So, as Max noted, a contradiction is thus, as you were worried about, Alex, enshrined in the provision to the code. As Ulysses has asked about, it does also open a back door to defer any questions of freedom of speech to the policies of the space, which can be rewritten by various authorities around campus. It essentially opens up a blank check for the administration to write policy that restricts free speech that can be deferred to based on the judgment of whoever the event manager is reading the policy in that moment. So this is a lot of leverage, a lot of power against the freedom of speech and the freedom of peaceful assembly. I would say, as a member of the CJC, we can make a better resolution. I think we have an obligation to make a better resolution. It's unanimous amongst the 30 public comments that people have made that they are critical and think this is a bad resolution. Not a single person stood up for it. All these people in this room are here because they're critical of it and are against it. The university faculty committee is against it. I think vote it down. I would urge you to vote it down. Send it back to the CJC, and we can write a much better resolution. Thank you.
Sponsors for 1 minute.
I don't think that there's ever going to be a unanimous resolution, right? I absolutely think that there's going to be very secret parts of it that folks are going to disagree to. I think Reese mentioned that a participatory process. I would have loved the opportunity to present the resolution and the thought process to the faculty senate committee before they voted to not support it. I think that there's a lot of opportunities for us to reach across assemblies, for the faculty senate to fill their seats on the CJC, for us to be more involved in the community. And unfortunately, that didn't happen on the side that's opposing. I do think that this provides clarity.
For members, the time allotted for this debate is expiring. Is there a motion to extend debate?
I'd like to make a motion to extend the debate by 20 minutes.
I have a motion. Is there a second? A second by Mr. Moore. Are there any opposition? Hearing none, debate is extended for 20 minutes. The next person on the speaker's list is Professor Chapitz.
Yes.
Sir, we welcome you for 2 minutes.
So let me endorse what's been said before me about the ambiguities in this new resolution. But let me point out something. One of the problems here that Professor Weaver would stress, I'll stress it again, and it's been mentioned over here, is we have a set of policies that are undemocratically arrived at by the administration, and we have a campus code that is democratically arrived at. And those policies can be used, as been pointed out, to subvert the democratic thrust of the code. One of the problems here also is that administrations have increased over the years while faculty has remained flat. Okay, so we have an increasing number of administrators who are in effect running the university. And that needs to be thought as well. We have an undemocratic section, we have a democratic section, and these two things are quite clearly, they're quite clearly in conflict. So that needs to be worked out. So I think the policy issue, I would agree, is the major issue. We can change the code very simply to get rid of the ambiguity, and that would be just leave it alone and change. There appears to be no need for a mandatory permit to. There is no need for a mandatory permit. And we can do that in 10 seconds here and have done with it, and then talk about the issue of democracy at Cornell, which does include the issue of free speech, by the way. So that's what I would suggest, is just amend this to there is no need, and then get down to the real conflict that's here between administration, faculty, and students.
Mr. Muzzy, for
2 minutes. One of the pillars that Eric left out was the staff community.
Yeah, that's fine.
Multiple members.
Certainly. Sorry.
The other piece of it is that the administration, the impressive administration that is being presented, is the same administration that opens their building, their offices, their facility to protest, right? One of the few, if not the only, to my knowledge, indoor space.
Well,
there's university and clearly there's...
I'm interested.
Okay. So the building that Cornell University owns where the administration resides, are opened up for protest. And I think that that's really interesting because they invite you into the space that they work and they occupy so that you can express your dissent for whatever it may be or express your viewpoints for whatever it may be. So I don't really see the administration as being as oppressive as it's being painted in a lot of these arguments. I find them welcoming to free speech and welcoming to the academic environment.
10 seconds. Are there other speakers who wish to speak on this issue? Yes. Sir, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Paul Berry.
I'm sorry?
Paul Berry.
Mr. Berry, you're recognized for 2 minutes.
I just had a question about part of the code that hasn't received as much attention yet. I don't have it right in front of me, but it's the part about demonstrations can be limited without limitation for a set of reasons, disrupting university business, interviews and whatnot. I just wonder if you could just explain to me the logic behind that, because it strikes me that permit or no permit, in that language, demonstrations should be limited for pretty much any reason. Thank you.
Okay. Professor Wayne, Professor Wayne, for 1 minute. Go ahead, please.
At a university, in any place, there's a number of interests that take place. Free speech has special privilege here. For example, down in Ithaca, you need a permit. There is no place you can have a protest without a permit. But at Cornell, you can have a protest without a permit anytime you want. So there's other things that are going on. So there are certain limitations. You know, when somebody teaches, maybe they'll have the ability to speak and give their
15 seconds
case to the students without interruption. That teaching is one of those movements, interviews with some other movements, other interests, etc. They're just competing interests. One rule doesn't trump everything.
That's time. Other speakers? I'm sorry, ma'am?
Hi.
Would you introduce yourself, please?
I'm Tasha Herrick. I basically didn't know about the issue when I read on it from the Facebook event yesterday, but just from the stuff I was hearing people saying, since it's like the campus code of conduct people, and like just the faculty weren't on it, I just heard that point and I thought, like, should that really affect students, even if the faculty weren't there to step up, like whether or not they should have not tested it? I don't know. I'm just saying if that should affect the students. I'm not really sure which way that on the issue, or that's just like what I said. And then on the permit, I feel like the biggest issue I'm coming to is, like, if you're giving a permit, like, I can understand restricting amplified sound because that will disrupt, like, classes and stuff like that. But if you're saying, like, the person with the UUP gets it, you're putting one voice above the other, which someone has said over here. And that's just, then who gets to decide, like, whose voice gets to be heard? So it's either, like, should be, like, no sound for everyone or, like, sound for equal sound for people.
Thank you. Mr. Music?
We believe that by saying there is no need for a permit in the code, says that you can do that. If you want to use amplified sound in certain spaces across campus, there's some policies that limit that. Free speech doesn't always come with a microphone. We're not restricting your ability to speak freely. But we are pointing out that if you do want to have some tools in aiding your speech, some of the spaces may require or may have a set of policies outlined that would be needed to be followed. I think the 1.2 with the faculty not being on the CJC, we raised that point because faculty members wanted it to be participatory.
10 seconds.
And those seats were never filled by the faculty members. So it's easy to say no now, but when we were crafting this, where was that faculty voice other than Randy serving as a faculty member on there from the UA?
That is time. I saw a hand back here. Ma'am, would you introduce yourself?
I'm here on the
We recognize you for 2 minutes.
Thank you. I just want to remind everyone that the audience here said that those buildings are not the administration. There are buildings. So is Home Plaza and all other public spaces. Given that, I think you should be able to speak in those spaces. If you say that the administration is not limiting our speech, but you got to respond to every person who strikes, we don't get to talk for more than 2 minutes. So it seems like an overwhelming opposition to this resolution, and yet the representation of that in this room is completely offset. Thank you.
Professor Wayne, for a minute.
So I'm going to say that the CJC meetings were open any time for anybody to come to them while the work was being done.
I don't know if necessarily 31 comments on a campus with a population such as ours is necessarily overwhelming. There's
what, 16,000 undergrads, 9,000 employees, how many thousand faculty? I don't know. The math for me doesn't add up to overwhelming, but I do hear the concerns in the voice.
No, we're within the minute.
I'm sorry, but no one of these thousands of undergraduate students are supporting this resolution from the comments. Beyond that, instead of ambiguousness going both ways, actually means going, like walking around, they just start leading us around, like ambulance around, and that's what you'll do in this resolution, right?
Thank you. Are there others who wish to speak? Sir, would you please introduce yourself?
Thank you. My name is Sean O'Connor.
Sean, we recognize you for 2 minutes.
So I just wanted to say that a lot of, or pretty much all of the language we used in this discussion is trying to, like, hide the political realities of this university in, like, a language of practicality and, like, supposedly politically neutral, like, building policy. Don't exist policies for, like, the day-to-day running of the building or the university business that we don't have a right to disrupt is, like, just this politically neutral thing. But that, like, completely ignores the way that power is structured in this university. As students, we are not these kind of, like, liberal subjects that are in a rational discourse with the administration. We are the ones who, like, the administration hears our voices, but then they make the decision. And so the mechanisms for student voices to be heard on this campus can and have broken down in the past. And as students, our only recourse is precisely to disrupt the university business as usual. And we should not give the administration any tools to stop that. Thank you.
Professor Wayne, for 1 minute.
Again, though, you would have been welcome to see some of the GJC meeting. If there was just clearly a thing, we were looking for
And I think, too, if I may, I think you're absolutely right. If you feel strongly about something, you have every right to disrupt whatever it is you choose. And that's your individual choice. And you have that right. But know that there are some rules and regulations. Should you choose to feel strongly that you want to disrupt those, there may be consequences for those. And that's well within your right to make that choice if you feel strongly enough to disrupt them. But
policies are not neutral. These are things that are preventing the only real, like, student power on this campus, which is our ability to, when we feel that, you know, the democratic portions of this university have broken down, as they have, like, many times in the past, arguably, like, are in the present. That this is our only recourse is not through these democratic, like, officially sanctioned mechanisms, but to go outside of those when those have broken down, have our voices heard, and have some amount of power in an overwhelmingly undemocratic university.
That is the balance of the members' time. You have about 15 more seconds if you...
No, I mean, I think okay. They have every right to have free speech.
Ma'am? Would you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm Megan Curlin.
Welcome. You're recognized for 2 minutes.
So I just want to emphasize, sort of, I know you all know this, it's super grave right now what's happening across universities, not just at Cornell when it comes to free speech, but my undergraduate at Emory University, that now has a free speech space, right? So free speech is limited to one location on campus. And that's precisely why you cannot let go of space when it comes to securing free speech in a university. You can't say that this place gets to decide what the role is here and this place gets to decide what it is here, because you end up like this, these types of institutions that have given up all control of it. Free speech needs to be guaranteed, not dependent upon other institutions, but guaranteed by this code. And it's not if you say, like, okay, this place can decide what it is now, this place can decide what it is now, that has to be maintained democratically. And I just think until you remove any sort of reference or allowing somebody else to at some point change that without your control and our control as a democratically deciding group, then it's lost and you start to have like a little corner where you can go stand and speak your piece every once in a while on a schedule, right? Like, it's absurd. How grave it is. Thanks.
No comment?
Appreciate your comment.
Other from non-members? Sir, please introduce yourself.
Hello, well, my name is Christopher Banks.
I recognize you, Christopher, for 2 minutes.
All right. I'm a master's student at ILR, and I also went to Emory University. I would like to tell the University Assembly that I'm opposed to these amendments to the code. For the reasons being, at Emory, we founded a campaign to get the workers there a union. And it was because of that campaign that ambiguous language like this has been put into code. And now, I didn't even know we just have a free speech corner. At the time when I went, you could basically have free speech wherever, which it should be that way. Of course, the devil is in the details. The problem is with the ambiguity. As Mr. George said, you know, that you said that they implied or they interpreted this a certain way, but what's to say that another administrator or policymaker will not interpret this another way? It's up to so much interpretation, and it's not clearly defined that this actually subverts free speech and it doesn't enhance it. I think we should go with your point, Mr. Mesley, of making free speech without permit, period, and not adding any other amendments to this code of conduct.
Okay. Other members from the other non-members wish to speak on this subject? Pam, please introduce yourself.
My name is Aisha Anderson.
We recognize you for 2 minutes.
Thank you. So, I don't have a code specifically, but I think given that it was never clarified, maybe very briefly, maybe I missed it, but even if it was never clarified, who decides the policies of the state? It seems incredibly dangerous to say, we should just give the policies to decide on their own. As far as we know, this is not a democratically elected thing. And for all we know, this is taking away from practices. The administrators, whoever wants to input their voice into that. So I think it would be dangerous just to go ahead and say, give the policies to decide on their own. We don't know if it's defensive policy, but they can do that. And also, just a small comment. Last semester, I did attend some of the CAC meetings, and just as a non-member, they didn't seem particularly open to non-members. Hopefully, it would be more like you just sit in the back, you listen, and then you maybe pass the material or two, but that was about it. There was no time to get an extra input. It was more of a
thank you. Due to time, is there one more person who wishes to speak who are non-member? One more? Not hearing any, then I'm closing the non-member speaker list and returning to members. I did see some member hands. Professor Booker for 2 minutes.
This is kind of a simple issue from the administrative point of view, the biologists, and we have animals. And you talk about how we shouldn't have any restriction on use of space. We have these animal facilities, for instance, that contain mushrooms, and if any of us go into those rooms unprotected, we could actually put those mice at risk in terms of sound. So administratively, there's a rule about who can enter, what you need to have on when you enter, and as a result, you know, that's important. There's space to use my kids, but if you live in that space, you can facilitate yourself at risk of being exposed to a certain radiation. You don't necessarily want those spaces to be open for anyone to go into. And so there are some administrative issues that have to be addressed. I actually think, and I think if you really want to be constructive on this, the issues have to go away from the code and onto policy and how that policy is determined. Because the reality is, you're always going to find exemptions. And once those exemptions are identified, you're at risk of losing what little leeway this code is. Because the code helps try to move violence. Not necessarily what the policy is. So the issue is one of policy and how we deal with administrative buildings, and that's where the focus needs to go. In other words, if the individual that owns that building or controls that space doesn't see what you're doing as being a violation, then there's no violation of the code. And how are those policies determined? Who gets to determine those policies? Who reviews those policies? None of that is set up.
Seconds. Mr. Measy, for a minute.
If I may ask the listening to the question from the FA's perspective, with the whole positive policy that you mentioned there were changes to, were there students involved in the creation of any of those changes about accessibility or things like that?
Yes, that's the reason. The reason that state policy was rather specifically changed for the 6% facility, because we can't. The FA jurisdiction is not over the campus, so we can't, while there's an ongoing discussion, even enter into that conversation unless it's with UGA. So we're not interested.
Yeah, but defining the space in our home plaza is something that students were very much part of.
Order, please.
Issues of situated knowledge that are not being addressed here. It's completely taken out of context. Sir, to suggest that the health.
Order, please. You are not recognized.
We don't. To suggest that, like, if the policy were changed to require no permit, your mice will then be at risk is completely manipulative, and it just has absolutely nothing to do with what we're.
That is time. Other members, comments? Mr. Reese Calderon for 2 minutes.
I think everyone that's protested that. I think the issue really is the procedures, not the code of conduct. And I do believe that each individual space should have its own procedures. I came here for us to get an education and a job. If I'm doing either or and someone's protesting outside the door, I will be very upset. And I think so they should. Yeah, because I couldn't hear.
Order, please. Order, please.
My professor, and I'm paying. I believe free speech. I believe I should say what I believe. And if I'm in a class, I cannot hear my professor, then that's why I believe that policy should have its own dictated to whatever they believe is right. That being said, I do think this is more specific, a resolution, but if the students don't feel that way, and they feel that the original one was better, if we change two words, and I'm all in support of changing the getting the original and changing two words. I don't believe that the code of conduct is in play. I think this one's actually better. But if you guys feel that that's the policy, I think that there is causing conflict. But if people believe that the first one was actually better, which I understand why there was disrupt in the first one and now there's disrupt now, then let's go back to the first one and change two words as was proposed. I don't think this really should be here. I think the real issue is the policy, not this. I think makes it perfectly clear saying that you don't need a permit. But if you feel like the first one's better, then let's go to that one and change two words, and I think it'll be very easy to resolve.
Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, our additional 20 minutes has expired. Do I have a motion to extend the debate another 10 minutes?
Motion extend.
I have a second. Are there any objections? Debate is extended a further 10 minutes. Are there other member comments? Professor Lowe?
Some of the history involved and why it's called the campus code of conduct. In fact, that has nothing to do with permits. I don't think the word permit even belongs in the campus code of conduct. The campus code of conduct should simply state how we as a community believe free speech should be allowed on this campus and not necessarily specify every interpretation of what free speech may or may not be. That occurs after the fact when someone tries to disrupt it or take it away. If you go and you say, you know, we support the idea in this university that all points of view will be heard, and attempts to prevent that are against the code. But nothing about permits. We can't control permits. We have nothing to do with permits. That code has nothing to do with permits. What you then do is you have to go to the article to say, if you are accused and go to the JA and found to be guilty of this, there will be some consequence. I personally am not going to vote in favor of the code because I don't love the chase. I don't even think permits should be in the code to begin with. It has nothing to do with a code of conduct. Conduct doesn't specify you have to go get a permit to do something. I think conduct should put some reasonable limit on individual rights to disrupt the rights of others, realizing that history is full of examples where people have chosen, for matters of conscience, to go around those rights and to speak their minds and to sit down and be dragged off to jail. You people didn't live through the Vietnam era. I did. Okay? A lot of the things that I heard over
15 seconds.
That disrupting people from going in to interviews, that's Dow Chemical. You have to go back. You have to go back in time and look at how the code came about when people were standing on the Willard Street set with shotguns.
They shouldn't be allowed to protest Dow Chemical. That should be outlawed.
Time has expired.
No, all I'm saying is that's why that those specific wording about interviews disrupting the interview process specifically looked and said, like, I'm against that. I was against it when I was at UCLA. I'm against it now.
The gentleman's time has expired.
But it happened anyway.
The gentleman's time has expired. No response. Other member comments on this side? We'll come to both of you. Mr. Moore, for 2 minutes.
Right. My issue with this is that it subjugates the code to any university policy made by anyone, anytime, anywhere, in my opinion. And so looking at that phrase, it seems that it's intended to allow things like procedures and code clauses to be enforced. My issue is that I feel that these are already allowed under the reasonable time, place, manner restrictions that are in the code now. And so reading this, it seems like, at best, the phrase about policies is redundant, and at worst, it opens up a huge hole for people to change and adjust the way that free speech is done on campus at any time. So could you address why you feel that reasonable time, place, manner restrictions are not enough to ensure that this is followed?
So,
Professor Wayne, for 1 minute.
Reasonable time, place, and manner, then defined by who? And putting the policies of the state, which is just so trivial and unambiguous. An hour of amplified sounds, no cars driving through at a certain time, cables can't stick out so far. It's just something clear where two people, no matter how passionate they might be about something, they say, yeah, we got it, we moved here, or we won't move here, or we won't move here. It just brings down all the what's reasonable?
Just
a few words.
15 or 14. You have the balance of your time, sir. About 20 seconds.
In my reading of the code, reasonable time, place, manner means reasonable to the community. And at least there is a qualifier there that says reasonable. Whereas policies, there's no indication whether or not they are good policies or bad policies, it's just policy. And in fact, we have a bad policy on the books right now that says that groups can be fined if they don't say that they have to occupy a space 3 weeks in advance. So this is not a hypothetical, it's already kind of happening. There are already bad policies.
That is the balance of the members' time. You have about another 15 seconds if you have anything else to say. I believe we have some comments here.
Yes. So I'd like to motion to amend the resolution, and I'm sorry, this might take a moment, so if I'm correct, I'll let you know.
Before we take set motions to amend, we want to finish members' round of comments, okay. Second round of comments, and then we can entertain motions to amend.
Okay.
Are there any other member comments? Hearing none, a minute for the sponsors to close out general debate.
I think this is our opportunity to make change. I think that we have an issue again. I think if there's an overwhelming sense that there's some questions in here, what Melissa's proposing to change, well within our right to the University Assembly, what I would ask is if we complete this process, we clarify the campus code, and let's do that here rather than kicking it back to a committee.
Thank you, sponsors. Now, for the members, that ends this time of debate on R9. We can entertain motions to amend. We can call the question to vote on the amendment. There are other options. I understand that there may be a motion to amend. It's a parliamentary question.
Can we put the computer back up so that we can have a document, a live document to...
If there's going to be a motion to amend, I would recommend that. If we can. Well, we'll get the process back up. For members, we have about 2 minutes left in the meeting. Can I ask that we extend the meeting for 10 minutes? A second from Ms. Odessa. Are there any objections? Then the meeting will be extended for 10 minutes, and we will then entertain a motion to amend. Okay. I guess we have to turn on the system so the screen will come down. It may have turned itself off. In the meantime, yes, please, the member may continue with the motion to amend. I'm sorry, let me interrupt 1 second. Members have a copy of the resolution in front of them, or in their package, which has line numbers. so that you can be very specific in what line you're talking about and the wording you would propose. Please continue.
So starting at line 43, goes from while to line 44 up to the word no. And then leave in no university permit is required for such outdoor activities, period. And then add in the benefit of a permit is so that the university staff can help ensure the safety of all participants. And then strike line 45, starting at the word so, all the way up to line 47, the word function.
I'm sorry, I'm not... up to the line so.
So at line 45, strike starting at the word so long.
I see.
Yeah. And then continue strike through line 47, the word functions.
Okay.
And then leave in the presence of a counter protest does not itself constitute a disruption to university function or authorize event. Moreover, those who oppose a speaker may thus make their views known. And then strike so long as, again, all the way up to the word listen on line 50. So it's starting at 49, so long as, and then you end at 50, striking out that whole part.
We will before...
I will. I'm sorry. And then adding, everyone has the right to be heard and to listen to others.
Do you need some help with the projection system?
I can also go up there.
We just, okay. I haven't seen the screen come back down, so normally I have to swipe and hit laptop. Mr. Bunk, thank you.
And then, I'm sorry, going back to line 37, striking, one second. Yeah, striking from the word respect to the word and stopping at the word no. So
line 37, respect the policy of space in question, and so so long as
they do
not. Very good.
Do you want me to read the whole thing to you now with all the...
One second, once we... Let's bring it up so that people can follow along, and then, yes, we will.
Read it. Sounds good.
To the extent that we can figure out how, sure. We will try and magnify the text.
Yeah, I'll just walk
in. While we're entertaining this motion to amend, are there other prospective motions to amend or other motions that members might wish to have considered before we...
I'm assuming the difference in most other bodies that I'm in that you can actually make changes?
A member can make motions to amend. If seconded, then the majority vote to accept the amendment. I'm sorry? The time for review is also up to members. So first there's a motion to amend to determine whether the members wish to adopt it and if adopt the amendment as proposed. If that is accepted, then the question is, are members prepared to call the question or refer for another 30 days of public comment or other items? The public is essentially here, and members can take that into consideration. There is a motion to amend the current question.
No, actually, I'm going to move that to table everything else from the agenda.
Oh, so as a parliamentary answer, clearly we're not going to get to the other items on the agenda because nobody's term will expire between this meeting and the next meeting, which is March 22nd. We will, after minutes and an introductory, we'll pick up right where we left off in this meeting, and Robert's rules allows for that continuation. So yes, we will not attempt to do another set of business afterwards. Sorry? I'm sorry, correction, the next meeting is March 25th. This place, this time. How are we doing? The projector still hasn't popped up. Sir. We need a vote for the motion to amend first, which has to be seconded, but we need to see it before I can. Sorry? We'll revalidate that in a minute. It was 15. Did members, did some members leave? Is that, do we know, Sarah, if he's coming back? Yeah. So, okay. Oh, yes. We're not in danger of a quorum, but we would need to know what the line is for majority. there are 13 members present at the moment, I believe. Some being in the front of the room. Sorry? Quorum is 9. Quorum is 9. With a quorum present, then it's a majority of members present for voting. How goes the technology? I see lights in the back of the projector. Stand by. Are members back in order and have their copy in front of them?
Okay, so
be it therefore resolved.
Yes. So right after that, be it therefore resolved, amended as follows. Outdoor picketing marches, rallies, and other demonstrations are traditional and legitimate forms of self-expression and defense on campus. Such activities are allowed so long as they, I'm striking that area from there, do not disrupt other functions.
Stand by. We just lost it.
Go back. So all of the same thing going to be regular, special, curricular activities, extracurricular activities, academic, professions and events, conduct of the university, business and employment interviews, the right to free speech here as another context requires the respect of the rights of others, outdoor picketing, marching, grabbing, and other demonstrations generally pose no threat along the lasting exclusive use of the university grounds of
I can, but if you can, please feel free to transit to the front of the room. That will not be.
Are we able to discuss it yet?
We have to. We would have to second this first. Have members been able to digest the proposed changes? Not until there is a second. If there's not a second, then the motion never comes to the floor. I stand by. So there's a motion to amend Resolution 9 as read, struck, and added. Is there a second? I have a second from Ms. Bailick. Discussion. Professor Lowe.
I would point out, regardless of vote, this body and the code can do nothing to prevent permitting by the administration or anybody else. That's outside the purview of the code. It's no different than us coming up with a resolution that all parking will be free or we're going to do away with Sundays. We can have no power whatsoever within the code to say anything about permits. And that whole section about permits should be removed.
you're speaking on 47 to 48, the benefit of permitting so the university can help. That blue statement, you believe, is inappropriate.
Anything that has to do with permits, I will tell you right now, if Jim Mingle's still the...
He is?
That would be struck down. That there's no way that...
And
that
in,
we
I can
anything in the code.
I can clarify that Cornell is private property, and they do have the right to have permits should they choose. That is, in fact, a fact.
Yeah, can I speak to the Mingle thing? I testified before a Mingle committee on this, and the president's committee wanted permits inserted into the code. They wanted that. That's one of the reasons we went. I was one of the sponsors of the faculty resolution before the Senate. That's why we went to the Senate, to ask for a faculty review of this to get rid of that language. So it is not true that the administration will strike that down. They want it in there.
The member is also correct.
Correct.
If we put it in here, they would be in their right to return it to us because they do have the right to have permits. But they could say, oh, we like what you gave us, and choose to approve it. That is also a fact.
That's why I vote against this, because I don't want the word permit in there.
Professor Wayne.
How this deals with the amplified sound.
Get the amplified sound. There's a red herring.
There's been a question asked to the sponsor of the change.
I don't think it directly does, and I think that there's been, from hearing discussions in the room, people don't want it to say that there's not allowed to have amplified sound. I think that by saying everyone has the right to be heard and listen to others kind of just lets it be that people have their right to speak and right to listen. I understand the concern that you're trying to point out.
When we came up with the policy of the change, the most like targeted policy possible to solve that ambiguity to prevent future issues.
I understand. And you can further amend it.
I'm sorry, did I hear there's a friendly amendment or?
I just said they can further amend.
Then I'll go for everything Melissa said in 42, line 42 on, but take back the line 37.
You mean so long as they respect the policies of the space in question? Okay. Professor Booker.
None of this matters as long as the administrators make a decision about what's going to happen. We don't set policy. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to have a judicial poll, which is a response to someone who's in charge of something, that tries to deal with policy, but this is not about policy. The focus has to be on the process by which it's been building space to use. And we're not going to get away from this issue until we address that issue. And it's a hard one, but it's one that everyone in this room should be concerned about. Because that's why administrators can misuse their policy. If you change it using real wording, I can still have rules about the space that could infringe upon tonight. And you need to know who those individuals are, how they think, and be able to influence their decisions. That's what's important to us.
Okay.
And we're not doing that.
Mr. Reese Calderon.
I think with the current amendment, you can still, the amplified sound is answered because it says that you cannot disrupt the functions, including without limitations, regular, special curricular activity, extracurricular activity. The mentions of our activities you still can't disrupt. So it is up to the administrator in that office. So I think even if you struck policy, and I think that would like make a lot of people in here like agree with this, a new amendment by striking the word policy is, as you just stated, still up to the administrator. So I think we should strike it just for the fact that I think that's what a lot of people feel this lash towards. And then we can move on to the actual policies in whole Plaza.
Are there other comments regarding the amendment? One second. There's been a request by non-members to address this. Will the sponsor of the amendment allow non-members to speak?
Can I say something really quickly?
Yes.
I just want to clarify for those that don't have the documents in front of them that from line 35 to midway through 41, with the exception of that policy part added in, that's actually currently what's in the code of conduct. So everything about the curricular activities, extracurricular activities is
in the code of conduct, and my purpose for changing anything to line 42 on from what is currently in the code is just to clarify what people's rights are and that the university is accepting of them. So.
I wonder if the university assembly would be amenable to also removing the line recommending a permit, because to my understanding, the code of conduct is actually setting out the fundamental principles according to which conduct should be governed at the university, and putting in a recommendation for a permit adds another level of strange ambiguity, and we understand and know from our experience doing political work on this campus that such ambiguities can be used in a way that's very harmful to the speech on this campus.
So are you referring to what I added in there? That's sentence I added in. So I added in the benefit of a permit is so that university staff can help ensure the safety of participants. And the purpose, just so you understand, of me putting that in there, because I think that if people are referring to the code of conduct whenever they are planning a protest, that it's beneficial for them to know that a permit may help ensure safety. I think that it's not, I didn't mean for it to be a recommending clause. I meant for it, or an encouraging clause in any way, shape, or form. I just meant for it to express what the benefit of a permit is. Yeah.
I guess my feeling is that that ends up pushing people to do it. And then that also adds in a certain justification that if they don't do it, that there may be negative repercussions, because this is what happens. That's why we're here, because of all these slippery things that get added in. So I just think people can know that at the level of regulation, maybe, and someone, and that's known, but like, where is the code? It's like, it adds this big gray item. Right?
Okay.
Yeah.
1 second. Go ahead.
So I think one of the interesting things is the way that we originally had proposed this was, just to kind of notice, we weren't calling for a permit or a UUP, so that's something we've heard very clearly in the beginning. What we're recommending is, if you feel that there's going to be a large protest or something, just give somebody a heads up, right? We're not encouraging a permit process through the way the code is currently being proposed to change it. What we're doing is saying that just that, hey, you might want to keep in mind, we plan to be here. That's really what we're suggesting. I think this, the benefit of a permit takes it one step further, and I don't think we need to go there.
Okay.
I amend my amendment. Didn't see the repercussions of the word permit.
1 second. You had a comment.
If he's going to amend that, then I
have. Okay. We're getting into a lot of parliamentary gray areas, but if you wish to amend your amendment, please do so quickly, and then we need to dispatch whether there's support for the amended change, and then come back to the either the new question or the previous question.
So the benefit, instead of saying the benefit of the permit is, et cetera, the benefit of advance notice. Okay, not striking.
What is striking mean? Are you recommending striking your sentence in blue?
Yes.
Completely striking the sentence in blue, 4748.
Yes.
No university permit is required. The presence of a counter-protest does not itself constitute a disruption.
Yes.
So, yes, it's elite. Very good. Are there other general comments? Ma'am, very briefly. Listen up, please. Order. Thank you.
But I think we should be very clear. Given what you wrote, nothing will change.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No problem.
I can
make
it.
Alright. Alright, let's come to order, please. Let's come to order. One last comment, please.
I completely recognize what you're saying. I think that the university assembly at a later date can pick up policy issues. Larger policy issues. I think, though, there is a purpose in the code of conduct, and I think that there's a purpose in the university assembly saying that this is what we would like the code of conduct to be, and we would like the policies recognized as code of conduct. I understand that the university can basically do what they want in terms of policy, and that's a different issue, and I think that if we want to take that up, that's another resolution, a whole other discussion, and separate from this, and I think there's benefit in this resolution.
Thank you. I now call the question on the amended motion. If you vote in favor of this, you are replacing the original Resolution 9 with the words as currently crafted on the screen and as read into the record. If you vote nay, then this amendment is null and void, and we will go back to the original question, which is the resolution that we had at the beginning of the meeting. Are there any questions about what I and they mean, or abstention? Do members have questions?
We're voting to accept the amendment to the resolution.
Correct. The alternate wordings as proposed.
So all in favor.
Question?
Is there not a grammatical error there after known and before everyone has the right to hear it?
What line?
49.
I'm not the
Okay. Are there further questions? All right. The question has been called on the amended wording. All in favor of the amended wording, please raise your placard. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I have 8 in favor of the amended wording, and Mr. Bunk is 9. Against the amended wording. 1, 2, 3. Abstain. 1. The amended wording carries. We now have an amended resolution for members' consideration. Are members prepared to call the question on the amended wording? Mr. Measy.
For the record,
there are no comments on the amended wording. I am calling the question on the amended wording. Voting in favor is to vote that resolution as passed by the University Assembly as amended. Voting nay is to vote down the resolution, and follow-on actions would be determined by members. Are there any questions?
Is it possible to hear what the community thinks of the wording, the new amended wording, before we vote?
We have had open discussion on that. Do members wish to reconsider opening debate on the amended motion?
I'll have a quick parliamentary question. I don't remember correctly. Do community members have a vote at all?
No.
Okay, just checking. As I have a different clause for that, I'm sorry.
Okay. There is a motion on the floor to reopen debate for community input. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. All in favor of reopening debate for additional community input, say, or raise your placards. I hear 1. Those opposed to opening debate, raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4. Those abstaining. The motion does not carry. There is a follow-on motion to reopen the amended resolution for public comment for 7 minutes.
7 minutes.
Is there a second? There is a second. All in favor, raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The motion carries without further vote. Is there additional public comment on the amended resolution? Very good. If people need to take a moment to read, please take a moment to read. We have 7 minutes. Sir, you have a comment to make. Come to order, please.
Democratic structures of power, and that is the clause that states such activities are allowed so long as they do not disrupt other functions, including without limitation, regular and special curricular activities, blah blah blah. I think that's so ambiguously worded. What constitutes a disruption to just regular university business? What constitutes university business? I feel as though that clause could have a lot of potential used to shut down free speech. And I think, once again, I'd like to raise the point that, the
the gentleman here spoke about there being like people with shotguns on Village Street. Like, that was why we have an Africana Studies program. There are often times when the democratic structures that are supposed to allow student voices to be heard break down on this campus, and we have to resort to the only power that we have as students when administrators rather than us are the ones that make decisions, and that is precisely disrupting university business. So I think that we should not include this clause, which provides the potential for broad punishment and action against those disrupting university business, or even those who aren't, when like people can interpret it however they want.
So the member yield the floor for response. First, Melissa, any response?
I understand your sentiment. I think, though, that is currently the code of conduct and has been for, I have no idea how long, a long time, though. So I personally don't feel like amending that, but if the university assembly feels that is necessary, feel free to. I think that there is some bit of nothing there. I don't want to protest in the middle of my call. Yeah.
Professor Lowe.
Removal of such wording is anarchy. You cannot have anarchy. If you remove that, you remove any limitation whatsoever on anybody coming and mugging in the neighbor and taking them enough, tearing your child and kicking them out this door. There have to be statements like that, but it's your right and duty to protest the people that went out onto the festival that got Africana Studies Center. They were also prosecuted. Whether or not they went to jail or not is a separate issue. You have the right to protest. You have the right to sit and be dragged off to the paddy wagon. But to eliminate any kind of sense of responsibility for your actions leads to anarchy. And I would be totally against it.
Thank you, Professor Lowe. Oops, we lost her.
It's a code of conduct. People are just going to go in.
Because of this university.
In the base right now.
People will adjust the chair, please. Comments should adjust the chair. And we do have other speakers.
Yeah.
Will you yield the floor?
Yeah.
Sir?
Yeah, so that is part of the old code of conduct. It seems to me also you want to think practically. We've gotten a lot done here in terms of the real key issues of permits and policies, which is important. The administration ultimately has to pass on this. I would remember that. And so you want to think strategically at this point about whether you want a substantially amended code of conduct, which we have now, or whether you want to push them to a place where they're going to say no go, and we're going to be back to square zero. The clause that this gentleman wants to take out, I'm not worried about anarchy. Or, you know, nothing. Anarchy at Cornell, geez, it's hard to get people to speak spontaneously in class here. So, I mean, anarchy is not the concern. I think that all of these points will come about through contestation. You'll protest what you want to protest, and if the administration comes back and says, we have a policy, you can't protest that, then we can adjudicate that policy. This is a way of actually forcing into the open, in ways, policies that might be open to change. So I think for practical reasons and also for political reasons, I would leave that.
Thank you, sir. For interest of time, I recognize you for self-limitation, if you're willing, for about a minute.
Very quickly. Following what Professor Chaffetz has said, I would simply like to agree with him and say that this version is satisfactory.
Very good. Ms. Schaffner, 1 second.
I would like to make a motion to table.
We're in the middle of debate.
We're so close.
So, stand by. Professor Lidwell.
1 second. I just want to thank Melissa for stepping in and doing this. I think that this is well improved for all the reasons we just heard, and I think it does create a clarity that was needed. So, since I spoke before against the first motion, I wanted
I can we have an amendment to table after the call question has been called?
Has it called?
Can
the
we just vote
called?
To vote?
Yeah.
That is called calling the question. Are we still have another? I'm sorry. I recognize Mr. Meese.
Who's going to call the question?
We are still in debate for another 90 seconds.
Motion to limit debate.
Motion to limit debate has been made. A motion to limit debate can be considered. It requires 2/3 vote. I ask unanimous consent to limit debate. Are there any objections? Hearing none, debate is now limited. Mr. Meese.
Motion to call the question.
There has been a motion to call the question. There is a second. I am without a parliamentarian, but I believe I have to go to a vote. If I have to go to a vote, then you would need to vote the motion down to then have further action on the motion. Are
all in favor of voting?
We called the question. I'm having kind of a parliamentarian double check. We do not want to abridge the right of members.
Unanimous. You just need to call it.
All right. Say that again?
The question has been called.
Yes.
So you need to.
We need to go to the vote.
Go to the vote.
Very good. All right. We are voting on the amendment, the resolution as amended and as has been read. All in favor, please raise your placard. In favor of the amendment as amended. Mr. Bunk, you're in favor? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 4. Those against? 1, 2, 3. Abstentions? 3. There are 13 in the room. The count is correct. The motion, the amended resolution passes. All members, all agenda items will be moved to the next meeting. May I have a motion to adjourn? Seconded without objection.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.